Oh, you want more?
More.
Oh, this good?
More.
Oh, wow, that was extreme.
More. Edging with Tucker and Maura.
That is brand new music from Monowales.
Monowales!
Sally and Jordan are with us.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Got a lot of stuff to talk about
here. Oh my God, so much stuff. You guys have been fire.
Thanks so much.
I was looking at the timeline of your musical career thus far, and I see that it was kind of smack dab during the pandemic, and I just wonder if you guys were ever worried that that was going to stifle your flow.
I mean, it did for a second.
Were you like, oh my God, what are the odds that this is happening at the exact time that our trajectory is going up this roller coaster?
I mean, I was just grateful it was happening at all. I'm not going to lie.
That there was interest in the band and that you guys were starting to get quite a bit of traction. I know you obviously were together before the pandemic, but you guys have been on a great run, as Maura's saying. Like, we're just listening to some of the songs that we've got in the last little bit. This is a song called Hear Me Out. I find it weird, and I was reading a little bit about you, that, Sally, you feel more comfortable on the road than you do at home. Like, you love the vibe, you love the experience. Most people kind of start, getting depressed or being away from home or living in hotels and
missing their friends.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I don't feel those things as well. It's just, I love the feeling of being on a road trip with your friends and the fact that I get to play every night. Like, there's so much highs in that that I enjoy, that sometimes being home means kind of being in your head a lot. And I just start to miss that a lot. And yeah, I think I'm just built for that kind of thing. Some people want to be home and do that. And I prefer to go out and travel and meet people and do that kind of thing.
Well, you guys are launching a big tour. You were on tour this summer with Grandson, but you're doing your own headlining tour. And for those who listen to us on 102.1 The Edge in our listening area, and check for dates around you as well. But through December, you're going to be in Waterloo on the 6th, in Hamilton on the 7th, in Barrie on the 8th, in Toronto at the Axis Club on December 14th. I mean, how do you even do back-to-back shows? I don't know. Is three in a row the most you would allow yourself to do without a break?
We'll do more than three. I think we've done five is probably the most in a row.
But Jordan, you're the drummer. You can do that. Sally's got a voice to protect.
I mean,
songs are not you're not singing like Billie Eilish up there. You're wailing.
I feel sorry for vocalists, because you can't put your instrument on a shelf and go party for the night. You know, you're always carrying it with you, and then it can get sick, or you can have too much to drink maybe, and you can hear it in your voice the next day. Do you have to dial back partying?
Honestly, I'm not really a big drinker, and so if I am on the road, I take my health very seriously because of that, and I am pretty much completely sober. Which isn't that hard anyway, since I kind of live that lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But just talking loud in a bar, you know?
Cognizant of everything that I'm doing and what I'm eating and how I'm sleeping. And I am pretty intense on the road, and Jordan can testify that the first thing I think about when I wake up is my body and my voice and my health. And that's kind of all that's on my mind all day until I play the show, and then I'm thinking about nothing but that moment with the community that we're in, and then I go back to time to take care of my voice, because it is pretty intense. And if you're not, then even one night of slipping up can mean getting sick, and then you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, and when you have three dates in a row or four dates in a row back to back, that could really get in the way, because then you have no chance to bounce back.
Sometimes you don't get a good sleep, and it's not anything that you did, but maybe you're on a freaking tour bus in a bunk bed that's going over a bunch of potholes, you know? How is it that you guarantee that you're going to feel good?
I can't. And to be honest, when you're gone for a while, all you can do is control the things that you can control, like trying to eat the best place that you can, wherever you are, depending on where you are, and things that are out of your control, you just kind of have to accept instead of be upset about. And if you just accept it, then it's easier, kind of.
Is it like hand sanitizer all the time when you shake hands, and, you know, being cognizant of that? Because obviously fans, you guys are pretty good about being interactive with your fans, and you want to see them and meet them, and... You don't get close to me. You look sick.
You know? I mean, if someone tells me they're sick, then usually we have respectful fans, and that's great. I don't know. We are a band that gets pretty sweaty out there. The fans get pretty sweaty after shows. So that's the kind of thing that doesn't gross me out. I'm not a very squeamish person. So if I'm covered in sweat, someone else is covered in sweat, and they want to hug, I'm not going to not hug them.
Nice. I like that about you.
And when you get home, is there a sense of relief that you can just kind of do whatever and you don't have to care so much about the voice preservation and, you know?
I always care about it. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
It's just something that's part of my life and my lifestyle. And if that's what I want to do every day for a living, then I just have to take care of it and do that. It's not like a temporary thing because it's like a long-term commitment. And,
you guys like
song.
Yeah, you guys like doing this one a lot live. Just like,
yeah, this one's for the fans.
Yeah.
You talk about, hang on, I want to listen to this first.
Nice.
What's it like listening to yourself like this? Is it weird?
It doesn't seem strange to me. We work these songs so hard in the studio. Like, by the time it gets to the point where we're sharing them with other people, it's like, it's just a part of you.
And you, Jordan, know. You never second guess like a drum fill or something that you did where you're like,
oh,
God.
All the time. Yeah. But like, recording is just, I've tried to shift my mindset from like recording is the perfect manifestation of a song into recording is a snapshot of us doing that song on that day, in that moment, and it's just a keepsake from that time. So
you let it go, kind of.
Yeah,
like...
and then like we play everything differently live.
Right.
So live, we've expanded a lot on the arrangements, especially the Tunnel Vision stuff, because we weren't in a room together when we were writing that music. We were doing it all over Zoom.
Oh my God.
But we didn't play, like, I didn't play the drum parts until I was tracking them in the studio.
Okay.
So that was like my first time actually developing a relationship with the material.
Is that your first time that you got live feedback from the rest of the band?
Yeah, well, it was all demoed in. So we were building it all in Ableton and Pro Tools and stuff like that. And then when we got in there, we were kind of piecing it together. It was a weird process. And then when we took those songs and developed them to perform live, we rearranged them to kind of bring that live essence back in, because mm-hmm. that's always really been important to us, to like capture the live energy of what we do.
Yeah.
And then that's the approach we took with this new material, is it's about capturing what we do live, where we did things more live off the floor. Like all those drum and bass takes for the most part on these new songs are just like me playing beginning to end.
Right.
And how much of a say do other people have? Like if Sally hears something and she's like, like you know, that's obviously hard for an ego when you think you've nailed the perfect thing and someone says,
I mean, we're generally, it's Zach and I going through the drum parts. Sally will weigh in here and there on stuff, but she's pretty trusting.
I have to have a really good case for it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or offer a solution, maybe. Instead,
exactly.
Just say, hey, can you try it this way just so we can hear it and then we can decide after? And
yeah.
Is there someone who does have final say in the band? I know, like, say Coldplay, for example. Will Champion, the drummer, is the guy who has the final say on songs. So there might be a song that Chris Martin wrote and he's, you know, the foundation of, but we'll be like, that's not us. That's not, we're not in the right place for this, you know, theme or whatever they're doing for their album. And he actually has the right to kind of shut something down and they respect his opinion.
We've given Zach a sort of free rein over that, especially with this last stuff, because he produced it. Mm. We were kind of like, it's easier if there's one person who can sort of like preside.
Yeah, well, that's what
like
I mean. Yeah, so there is somebody
of the record. We all weigh in. We all contribute.
I think the main thing is we've come a long way as people and as a band, so we trust each other a lot more than we would have years ago when we were getting started. And now we just have a lot of trust. Like, I'm like, Jordan is going to do the best he can do. And I'm only going to weigh in if I really think that I have something that's going to be a better solution. And same with me. I'm really grateful. The guys give me a lot of trust and leeway to kind of go in and just do my thing. And unless, again, something is like a red flag, then for the most part, we're all good.
So there's often the misconception that the front person for the band is also the boss of the band, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not always the case, certainly.
This is not that kind of band. We've always been a band that really champions our collaboration, and we all have equal say in the band.
Does everyone get a writing credit then on every song?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, I think that's the way to stay together as a band, too. I think you two famously, you know, everyone gets an equal writing credit no matter what because they're all part of the process.
Tragically Hip, too, right?
I'm not sure. But I know for sure you two act that way. And mm-hmm. I think it's a good thing because then somebody's not considering themselves. Like, there isn't a hierarchy within the band.
I think when you start nickel and diming each other over who wrote which lyric.
Yeah, I did more words. Yeah. I should get more money out of it or whatever. Yeah.
It's just a melting pot at the end of the day, and we all do contribute to all the songs. So it's just the truth.
Yeah.
You mentioned something earlier about, you know, how you take things seriously, you're doing this as a career and stuff. At what point did you realize that it was going to be a career and that it was actually working enough that you could pay your bills and afford to live away from home? And what was the moment?
I mean, we quit, like Zach and I quit our jobs in 2019, fall of 2019.
What did you do before?
We were both teaching music at the time.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Was that a good day? When
quitting?
You quit?
It was terrifying. And it became a lot more terrifying because the pandemic was like 6 months later. And we were like, oh, we made a mistake here.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but it is what it is.
What were you doing at that time, Sally?
It's hard for me to even remember. Like, I feel like I took more time to want to do this band before you guys quit. And I was doing a lot of social media marketing. I had my own business at the time. Okay. I don't do that now. I'm kind of too busy with Monowheels. Mm-hmm. But I was just trying to find my own ways to make money and just so that I could continue to make Monowheels a priority.
Yeah.
That was always kind of my number one. It's been my number one for years. So it wasn't even a decision where it's like, now I'm taking this seriously. Maybe at a time, taking it seriously would have been a different mindset, but I was always taking it seriously. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so there wasn't like a, you know, some say you shouldn't have a backup plan because
I don't and I never did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but the idea is if you have a backup plan, as soon as things get hard, you go back to the backup plan and you give up your dream. Whereas I think I'm more sensible. You know, you think, I wanted to do radio, but I did a university degree, even though I don't need one. Mm-hmm. Just because if as a backup plan, I got to rebuild my life.
Yeah,
I really don't think it's a bad thing to have a backup plan. Man, I've always had a backup plan, but I've just also been determined to do this. So it's not like if you're not putting everything into it and you're just leaning back into the backup plan all the time, then you're not going to go anywhere.
But the backup plan is also in the same field. Like you were teaching music, you were around music. That seems to be the answer, right?
What about sociology? I often wonder how hard it is for somebody to make a living in music, you know, and I wonder about the longevity of that. I can think of a band, say, like Sloan. They've been around for 40 years. Now, are they in a position where they can retire and never have to play again and continue to pay the bills? Like, at what point, like, you know, are there, obviously the people that are playing Rogers Center and stadiums and arenas are probably going to be set up. But when you're playing like Massey Hall and stuff, at what point do you worry about like, oh, can I retire doing this? Or are you just...
It's tough, man. I think it differs for everybody, too. It differs like how many hits you've had, what kind of royalties you have coming in, what your touring business is like. There's so many different revenue streams.
Isn't it all touring and merch now? Like, it's so hard to make music off streams and selling music.
Can you tell when you've had like a lot of streams on Spotify? Do you get like some notification or something?
We get statements from our distributor.
Oh, you do, right?
Yeah. So we'll see. Like, you'll see money will come in, but it's not at least for us so far, streaming has not been the most lucrative part of the business.
That's what we hear.
Yeah. We hear like it's
millions of streams.
It's not just not the most lucrative. It's like embarrassingly terrible for the artist. Yeah.
And if you're signed to a label, you're not really getting that either, depending on what your profit sharing deal is or what you've been advanced or whatever. Like,
man,
that's
you
not
need
really
a business degree for this kind of thing.
There's a lot. You got to know a lot. That's sort of what Sally was bringing up a minute ago, where she's like, what taking this seriously feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think you're taking it seriously. Like, 4 years ago, we're like, oh yeah, we're all in. We're taking this so seriously. And then a year later, we're like, oh shit, like, there's so much more to this than we thought. And that's basically year over year, it's just moving up and up and up, like the scope of responsibility.
And I mean, you guys have been handling a lot of your affairs yourself with distribution deals, but...
Yeah, we've never had a label. We've done this all independently.
And it's kind of cool, isn't it? To, like, know that you've done this and that, you know, that you're not... Yeah. Kind of being forced upon people, and
you're not desperate, you know.
Yeah, it does
a little bit desperate. Yeah,
it does feel good to be able to still say that we're indie, just because. Yeah, I don't want to say that it's just us. We're definitely grateful that we have an incredible team and supporters, and the fact that our fans do back us is the reason why we continue to be and that we can.
And thank God for technology, so you don't, you know, you can distribute your stuff using what's available to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know, Spotify. I can put up a song on Spotify. I can put up a song on YouTube. I can put out a song in any, you know, any streaming service or TikTok and whatever. Have you guys have fallen into that TikTok pattern of floating an idea out there? And just saying, hey, what do you think of this? And then if it hits, then you're like, okay, I guess we should write the rest of it.
Should
I be honest
yet?
About this? Okay. I just want to be straight up because I don't think people know. Most of the time, that's fake. Like, I just want to say.
That's also true, yeah.
What do you mean?
Like, most of the time, that song has been written months before, and now it's a marketing plan where they're like, oh, do you like this? And they've already pre-planned, like, 70 videos and this whole thing so that it's a scheme to get... I'm just going to be honest.
Yeah, that happening organically is rare if it happens.
You're telling me that what I'm seeing on TikTok is not real?
Yeah, and a lot of it is like labels are also on it, and if you're really smart then and you're indie, then you're able to do that formula on your own. Not saying that it doesn't happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just now it happens so often that... Like, I just want to be straight up about it.
Yeah, something stinks about it, you know? Something stinks. It's not legit.
It's lies.
Yeah.
What was Oshiega like? Was that kind of a pinnacle for you guys? I also saw you played Hillside, which I'm from Guelph originally,
oh, nice.
So I'd like to think that was the pinnacle, but was... Mm-hmm. On par. What were those shows like? And are those kind of your most exciting shows you've done to date?
I've been thinking about Oshiega a lot lately. So obviously it left a mark on me. But I go every year. Like, I'm a paying patron of Oshiega. I went last year or this year, even though I didn't play as well. So it meant a lot to me to be like, I've been coming to this since I was a teenager, and it means so much to me coming out to Montreal and seeing my favorite band. So to be able to play on a main stage as well, it was really emotional, and I expressed that on stage. I couldn't keep it together. I looked at you. I was like trying not to cry because crying and singing is not it. It's a really hard thing to do. It was very beautiful and very special. And same with Hillside, though, is different. I love playing in tents. Like, festivals that are in tents
shows are fun.
Are some of my favorite, because people
really?
Are kind of like forced to be in the tent because it's awkward.
It contains the vibe.
Yeah. And there's always a beautiful energy, and I kind of prefer it in festivals.
Yeah, Hillside was a great time. One of my favorite shows from this past summer was Somo Fest in PEI.
In a tent.
We were also in a tent.
Oh,
tents.
And that was just so surprised because we showed up. They were flipping between stages, so it was like while we were sound checking, the main stage was playing, and it was empty. The tent was empty. And then we just like jumped into the trailer, got changed, and came out, and the tent was like packed out the door, and I was like, oh, this is crazy.
It's go time.
We just like jumped on a plate, and it was amazing.
You get a bit of a breeze with a tent. That's kind of nice.
No.
You don't get like the wind
stifling.
Coming through.
It's like the hottest situation you can be in. And personally, I'm effed up. I love it. Like, I love to get on stage and feel like I'm going to pass out. It's so hot. That's when my adrenaline, like, kicks in and I have some of the best shows.
Should wear like a snowsuit or something on stage.
I do sometimes. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
I do.
Got snow pants. Yeah. So that's a part of the vibe.
You were mentioning with all the shows you have coming up, it's a big tour of Canada and the U.S. that some of these shows are all ages and some of them aren't. Yeah. And I wonder if you can explain the process of like deciding if it's going to be an all ages show or not.
It's usually the process is us going to our manager and saying, please make as many of these all ages as you possibly can. And then he goes to our agent and says, please, please talk to all the promoters and try to make these shows all ages. And then in some cases, we're able to make it happen. And in others, we're not, for various reasons, like the regional laws or the cost or whatever.
But the type of festival, maybe.
We just have no say whatsoever. But right. if it's our show, like our headline show, then we can try.
So if a fan is pissed because they can't go to your show because they're 18 or 17 or something, it's not your fault. What you're saying is that you try your best and it's out of your hands if it's not all ages.
Basically, yes.
Yeah. And it breaks our heart that when it's not, like when I get messages and we're like, why are you doing this to me? I'm like, why are you doing this to me? Like, we really do prefer it. And we hope that, you know, in the future, as much as we can, we try to make that happen. So that everyone
culturally in this country, it's super important that kids are able to go to see shows. It starts this ecosystem where they feel like they can make their own bands and access this thing when they're kept away from it until, and they only see it in like the bigger venues until they're 19.
I was just gonna say, you think about an artist like Taylor Swift, and I'm assuming that she is setting her rules and making those shows all ages.
I mean,
I'm sure she is.
I think,
like, at that level, you do whatever you want.
You do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
And it's also the venue she's playing. It's always stadiums, and they're equipped, probably. There's so many staff that they can handle the all ages. They can card at location, you know, of the bar. Whereas a smaller, more intimate club, which is the best place to see live music, let's be honest. Sometimes they just don't have the infrastructure.
Yeah.
I went and saw Alexis on Fire, and it was an all ages show. And not only that, they didn't serve booze inside.
Nice. Like, period.
And that was the first time I'd experienced that. And it was at an arena in London. And I was like, Jesus, like, there isn't one area where I can go as an adult to get a drink. And
that's interesting that they chose to do that.
I don't know.
I don't mind
if
it,
they chose it.
It was definitely, I feel like, the venue.
I think it was the venue.
Maybe
I think
so,
they.
Yeah.
That they may have
show.
Wanted. Maybe they were scared of them then. You know, maybe they thought, oh, last thing we want is a bunch of like Alexis on Fire drunk fans. I don't know. Maybe they're conservative. It was weird. I'd never seen that before and not since at a venue so large.
I feel like I guarantee it had to do more like with a logistical thing than anything
like
else.
They couldn't
it's probably
staff
a boring
it.
Answer to that one.
Guys. You're heading out on tour. You're going to be playing all these live shows. And it makes me think, like, there's got to be cities on that list where you are thinking, ah, we kill it every time we go there. Like, Red Deer loves us. Calgary loves us.
Calgary,
we're still trying to convince people in Winnipeg. I don't know. Like, I'm just throwing out city names. But, like...
Calgary's a standout for sure.
Is it?
Calgary's a standout.
Yeah. Calgary's
like,
great.
Big Mono Whales fans there.
Honestly, Winnipeg has been really good as well. Victoria's amazing. Vancouver is amazing. Toronto. Hamilton.
Hamilton's
goes
badass.
Hard. Hamilton goes hard.
I've heard before from bands that Toronto is kind of like a laid back, reserved crowd. And maybe it's hard for you to weigh in on this because it's also your hometown. So the audience must be filled with friends and family.
I just thought we were talking about places that were in Toronto because honestly, Toronto is usually the craziest show.
Yeah.
It's the craziest show.
Yeah.
I see. Because
it's the hometown show.
Because it's the hometown.
And there's people who have been following us from like when we were in other bands from years ago and stuff. Like there's like the history runs so deep here.
Yeah.
Will you ever play a song from another band? Has that
We've
ever
talked
happened?
About it.
Yeah.
We've talked about bringing back some like really old stuff.
Well,
this just hasn't happened.
On this coming tour, we're bringing back a couple of older songs that you might have not heard for years. And we're excited to revitalize those.
Yeah. We haven't played certain ones since probably like 2018.
Yeah, this is a song from one of your old bands, right? I think. For Jordan, when you were in Nine Inch Nails.
I don't talk about that part of my life. Dark times.
When you do a song like this, does it bring in a whole new group of fans that discover you through a cover? Like, is it a cool marketing strategy in a way?
I don't know if I see it as much as that, other than, like, I freaking love this song.
Yeah.
And
I want to do your own version. Yeah.
And, you know, just hoping that you do it justice also if you're a huge fan of the band. And what I find is it's one of the songs that can really win over a crowd.
Oh, yeah. There's some crusty old dudes at festivals that just stare us down for like 40 minutes. And then we
close
with this.
For you.
They're like,
we're in now. Yeah.
So you actively are looking through the audience and trying to win people over when you're performing?
Yes and no, because if that's something I really cared about a lot, I would be really like upset, I think.
I see.
A lot of the time, because then you're looking for the negative.
Yeah, you're looking at people looking at their phone or something.
Yeah, no, for the most part, I actually really try to give attention to the people caring and giving a shit, and I can swear.
Yeah. Shits, and, work, fox.
Yeah,
because
like I really feed off the energy of the crowd. So if someone is there and they're giving it to me, I'm like, I here we are together. I'm going to give it to you rather than focus on anything else than that.
What's the worst thing that's ever happened during a live performance for you guys, and how did you rebound?
The worst thing for me is when the tracks go down.
It's like logistical.
Yeah, like when the computer just like,
oh,
because
you got some things that are you got to start
click
live,
in our
right?
Ears, yeah, and everything is like kind of planned, and we have different things happening in our ears than you hear out there. Yeah.
Just for timing,
and our light show runs off that, so like when we're hitting something, the lights like go
so
crazy
it's all
and stuff.
Synchronized.
It's all part of the
connected.
Show. So when that. When something goes wrong there, that's right beside me. So if you look at me on stage, that's like my domain.
Oh my God, that must be
and
stressful.
And when I look over and that screen is blank, or when like with some of the flickering lights, I'm like, oh, that's not working right. Like we were playing a casino with Our Lady Peace. We played a
Oh,
the Coliseum.
That's my worst situation.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
I wasn't even going to tell that
what?
Story.
What happened? Okay.
But yeah, the power supply fell out of the back of our rig. So and I'm looking at it. I'm like, okay. Let's
and
just keep let's finish
stop,
the song,
right?
And then I just like leapt over the thing, started plugging things back in.
So the lights weren't even going for that song. Then
that was like a different.
We were opening.
Yeah,
so
we were opening,
different.
So we didn't have our lights, but we just had other stuff. Stuff that you were hearing in the crowd that you couldn't hear.
Did Our Lady Peace like keep the volume down for you guys so that they would be louder on there? Like, do you guys end up in that game?
They're amazing.
They're the nicest.
Like most like Rain, literally. Texts me on my release days and stuff and is like, the song's great, like truly great supportive people, and they've always just encouraged us and given us a lot of love and opportunity, so we're grateful.
Does
for
that
them.
Still happen though, where it's like the opener doesn't get to 10, they get to 8, or you know,
that's
what
a
volume.
Oh, yeah,
it's
TV
a thing.
Limits is totally a thing, yeah.
And the lighting, for some reason, they don't get the same lights, you know.
Well, you want the headliner to be like the big bad wolf.
So
you
you're
know?
Okay with it then.
We understand our place. Exists. We know what the thing is, and we're just grateful to be there. So
what does happened to you at that show, Sally, that it was so bad for you?
You brought it up, not
I'm
me.
Sorry. I just had a nip slip and yeah, it was.
And you didn't know, and someone told you?
No, it was Hand That Feeds, and it was the entire ending of it. And I'm
putting myself in the moment.
We're visualizing.
Okay. Yeah. I had and I go hard. Like, if you've seen us do this live, at the end, I'm on the floor and, like, freaking out and jumping rope and all this stuff. So it was out for a while, and it was our finisher. So then I'm like, thank you. And I have no idea. And then the crowd, this one guy is like, and I look down and I'm like, oh no. And then I'm like, all right, well, good night.
We all have nipples, you know.
Yeah.
Every human being.
Yeah, and no, the truth is, I always wear nipple pasties no matter what, like under all my clothes. And this was the one time in my entire life that I had forgot, because Rain had come into the dressing room to wish us a good show in the moments that I was like dressing. And in that exact moment, it slipped to my mind. Yeah. Ha ha. And then it was like, had to be the day, of course, that we were playing in like sold out casino opening for them.
Yeah, it was like 5,000
people. Jumbotron as well. Yeah.
Those screens are
Oh my God.
Yeah,
screens.
It was. And some people even came up to me and were like, oh, she planned that. I'm like, I did not plan that. Like, I didn't want that to happen. I promise.
And then we heard there were like cameramen like zooming in on it.
I was just going to say.
Some class, man. Yeah. Like, that's not cool.
Do people screen grab those moments and you see them on social media?
Literally, I saw. And this actually kind of upset me. I don't like it, especially because like it wasn't consensual. I understand this is the world we live in, but I didn't consent for that to happen.
Mm. Yes.
So I would, if I were to want to show my body, I want that to be kind of my choice.
Yes.
Understanding the weirdness of the situation, I did try to go and see what existed on the internet, and someone posted the entire thing on Facebook. And what was the most upsetting was his profile photo was like me and my two daughters, and I love my, you know, kids and my daughter. And I'm like, dude, like, come on.
What if that was your daughter up there?
Like, that's kind of the gross part of it.
Yeah.
It's a drag.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
So that's my terrible story.
It's actually Rain's fault, I feel like. He totally sidelined you.
I never told him that part.
Yeah, I don't even know if he knows that happened that day.
Yeah, I won't tell, because I don't want to be like, it was your fault. Like, it wasn't. It was my fault, but it was his fault.
Yeah. Who's opening for you guys? Or does it change depending where you are?
Depending on where we are, it does change.
And you get to pick?
Yeah, we do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So these are people that are Mono Whales approved.
100%. Yeah,
and I can't
list them all
off the top of my head.
That must be fun for you guys, too.
It is cool. We do get to have certain people that, like, we have Revive the Rose in Hamilton, who's, like, Andy's band, who's, like, the most fun, crazy dude I've just ever met in my life. He's such a character, and I'm so excited to play with him because it's just going to be a blast. We have Bleaker in Toronto. We have Vox Rea in BC on that whole run. We have FKB all through Alberta.
And you tell them you're going to get 80% of the volume. We're going to be at 100%, and that's just the way it is.
We actually have never given limits.
No.
We've never given limits.
We just want people to do their best.
Yeah.
The way I look at it, and I don't understand when it's, you know, even if it's at an arena show, is that you want everyone to have the best time possible.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And if they're there, I mean, the opening act is an important part of that. And if they're getting the full audio at their, you know, that they have access to, then maybe their show is going to be better and people are going to be more primed for when you're on stage.
That's true.
You know?
But they're, you know, they're fluffing them up, you know? Like, you don't want to blast
fluffers.
Them right away.
They're
you got to give them a minute.
Gentle fluffing.
Yeah, just a gentle fluffing.
And then you blow their hair back.
Yeah.
All right. I get it.
Guys, I feel like we could talk all day, but, you know, I want to let you guys go do your thing and prep for this big tour. And thanks so much for stopping by before you take off.
We appreciate you having us, guys. It means a lot.
Yeah, we're excited to come out and see you out in America, out here in Canada, and for everywhere else. We're on socials at Mono Whales if you want to see the crazy antics we get up to on the road.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.